And just like that, we are back. Welcome to the Gab and Jules show. After a little break, we're back. New season, first day. No Gabriele Marcotti because he's older than us, so he needs a longer holidays. But we're here with Stuart Robson. Hello, Stuart.
Hello to you as well.
Thank you for coming on. We'll also have Mark Ogden joining us for the first segment about Manchester United. We'll talk about transfer, have a little transfer special for the first show of the season.
Yep.
Talk about United, their new signing, how they will play them, what kind of formation, etc., what they will do in the remaining of the transfer window. We'll have a word on Chelsea, on Arsenal, on Spurs, on Manchester City, Jack Grealish, Harry Kane, all of that, and the quick hits. But really, we should start with United because Stu and Mark Ogden will join us after. The signing of Sancho and Varane really have been the most exciting things that we've had so far in the Premier League.
Yeah, they're two good players on paper. Two good signings for Manchester United, I would say. I think Varane complements Maguire perfectly. You know, he's got that little bit of pace. He can read the game quite well. I think he's a top-class defender. Maguire's good on the ball and will come out with it better than Varane will. So I think it's a good combination. Sancho, depends which Sancho you get.
Yeah.
The one that started last season for Dortmund, who was very poor, I thought, made bad decisions, didn't go past his man enough times, didn't create too much, or the Sancho we saw at the end of the season, who was outstanding. But of course, where does he fit into the Manchester United team?
Okay, what do you think? Where does he fit?
I think obviously, United have done some good business. They've done it earlier, which is a big thing. In the past, they got to the last week of the window and been a bit in chaos. But I think this time, they've actually done it quickly, and that's the good thing, that whether Varane starts the season, I'm not sure. He might not play the Leeds game the first weekend, but it gives them a sense of stability and consistency, and I think that's a good thing. And Stuart's right. You know, Varane does give them an upgrade at the back. Varane and Maguire, for me, has the ability to become a say a title-winning defence, but it's the start of it, and I think it gives Maguire that centre-half alongside that he can trust. I don't think Maguire's ever had that at United. He's not trusted Lindelof or Bailly or Jones, and I think if you have trust between your two centre-halves, that makes such a massive difference. I think it could also have a positive effect on David De Gea if he starts the season. De Gea, again, hasn't had defenders in front of him he could trust. So, Varane and Maguire, two experienced top-class centre-halves, makes United better. Makes United better as a midfield because they don't have to drop as deep. So, all in all, this signing could be transformative for United. In terms of Sancho, I think, you know, Sancho makes United better going forward, you know, every time. They've had issues up front in the last couple of seasons, I think. You know, whether it's Martial, Daniel James, Marcus Rashford, nobody's really kind of cracked that right side of the front three. So, the good signings for United, but I think now the priority now is to get players out because they've got six centre-halves on the books with around seven, if you count Scott McTominay. So, they need to move players out. And if they do that, they could bring in more players like Kieran Trippier, Camavinga. There's players that they can bring in to make them even stronger. But right now, I still think they're a little bit short of being a title-winning team.
Okay, but if we look at it on paper, boys, so you'll have Henderson or De Gea in goal, which, Henderson is pretty reliable, and De Gea, if he goes back to his best level, is a really good goalkeeper. Then a back four of Shaw, Maguire, Varane, and Wan-Bissaka right back until Trippier arrives, for example, Ogie. Then you play Pogba, Bruno Fernandes, and let's say one of Fred or McTominay in midfield, and then up front you've got Rashford when he's back, for example, Sancho, and then Cavani up front. This is a pretty good-looking team, right?
It's a good-looking team. I'd love to have seen that team with Cavani 5 years ago when he was at his very best. Cavani still is past his best. He's a great movement in the box, but he's not going to hold up the play. He's not going to be the player he was when he was at Napoli and he was for PSG. You still need the wide players to perform well. And that the problem that Manchester United have had is when teams have dropped deep and the wide players, usually been Rashford and Greenwood, have come far too deep to get the ball. Instead of staying up front and getting close to the centre forward, they've dropped too deep to get the ball. And that comes down to the coach as well. Hopefully, with Sancho in the side, he's got the ability to can get hold of the ball high up the field, go past people and make things happen. And other players can then get into the box.
Okay, is that title challenger team?
I don't think it's a title challenging team. I really don't. And maybe it's because I think City have got to set the bar so high. You know, they won it last season in second game, honestly, so let's be honest. I do think that they will add to the squad with Grealish and or Harry Kane. I think that takes City further away. But even if they don't add those players, I still think City are stronger than Man United. I think Liverpool as well will be stronger with Van Dijk coming back. So I just doubt United's resolve in the big games. You know, last season, when it mattered, they didn't win any of the games. Leipzig in the Champions League, PSG in the Champions League, City in the Carabao Cup, Leicester in the FA Cup. All the big games they had to win, they didn't do it. So does Sancho and Varane make that a difference, that kind of mentality difference? I'm not sure. It really needs, for me, a world-class holding midfielder. Because if you're going to play 4-3-3, can you rely on McTominay or Matic or Fred to be that guy. I think McTominay's got a lot of potential, but the other two, you know, Matic is past his best, and Fred, I don't think he's ever had his best, has he? I mean, he's not good enough, basically. So I think United need to find something to solve that problem before they can be a title-winning team.
And then we always go back to Solskjaer anyway, to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's got a new contract. They've given him a new contract. You know my reservation on him. I think we've seen a bit of progress in the last season. There's things that they've done better, but I still think there's a lot more for him to do with that team.
Absolutely. I put him in the same category as Gareth Southgate. I think he's a good man manager. He sort of gets on with the players. He manages the board quite well, and he's good with the press. Is he a top-class coach? I don't think he is, because, as Oggy just said, in the big games, when you have to make the big decisions, when you need to change things, he hasn't been able to do that well enough over the course of his tenure.
Right, Oggy, let's hear your opinion on Solskjaer. I mean, not on what you, because we know what you think of him, but more, does this increase the pressure on him that now with Varane and Sancho, this is a team to go to the next level, and is he capable of taking that team to the next level with those, especially those two extra players, and build on what he did last season? Because second place last season, you know, was a good season, to be fair.
Look, in most clubs, it would put the pressure on. But with Solskjaer and Man United, it's a really strange situation because, you know, if this was Chelsea or Real Madrid, there's no way in a million years he would have been given an extension. He's got a year left in his contract to be given a three-year extension. It wouldn't happen. For me, he's got United knocking on the door, but they still haven't looked like they're going to knock it down. So why give him this long-term contract? So does that mean he's under any more pressure next? If they don't win the league next year or a cup, does it mean he's going to go? I really don't know. I think, if it was Chelsea or Madrid, no titles next year, no trophies, he's gone. So he may have longer because United believe that there's a progression, but it's a very slow progression. But you look at the stats, you know, every year he's got better in the league. But it's too slow for me. The progression is too slow. So bringing these players in, the excuses are wearing thin every year. And I'm not saying he trots out excuses. He doesn't. But I'm saying that every season that goes by, with every sign they make, it means they've got less ability to say, well, we needed this, we needed that. But ultimately, is he the guy that can take United from second to title or from runners-up to winning? I don't think he is. I don't see him as being a Klopp or a Guardiola or a Pochettino or a coach that can make a difference. I've never seen Solskjaer on a touchline or with a selection make a difference in a big game. And that is what it all boils down to at the end of the day. And I'm not sure whether there is enough. I'm not sure what message it sends to the team and the squad that the club have given him a three-year contract when he's won nothing. I think it suggests an element of softness at United, a lack of a hard edge, which, again, I keep using Chelsea's reference. Chelsea have no issues whatsoever in getting rid of managers that are performing. Frank Lampard, club legend, gone. Thomas Tuchel comes in, Champions League winner 6 months later. So clubs like Chelsea have shown that you can succeed by making ruthless decisions. United, for me, lack ruthlessness. And that is right from the top. The owners aren't very ruthless. The manager's not ruthless. And it seeps through to the team. And when you need to be ruthless on the pitch to kill a team off, to win a game, I don't know if United have got it. And that stems from the guy on the touchline.
You're tough because you're from the north. But I don't like Solskjaer, and I'm not a big fan, and I don't think he's that great. However, Stu, I want to believe that there's a point where he will learn from disappointments from the past. So we've seen, we talked about it with Ogi last season, that curse of the semi-final. I think he had five in a row where they kept losing. Then finally they go into a final, the Europa League final, and then they're rubbish in that final against Villarreal and end up losing on penalties. But I'm thinking, okay, at some point, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will learn from all those games, all the disappointment, what worked, what didn't work, what he could have done better or what he could have done differently to make him a better manager. And then to go back on what Ogi just said, a manager that can go and win something and something big. I'm not talking like a community shield or that kind of stuff.
I don't think he is learning, because I mentioned it earlier, the same mistakes keep happening. And the time they have problems when teams sit deep and say, okay, come and break us down. Now, if teams drop deep, then you've got to get the ball wide, get crosses into the box, get more players in the box. And your front players have to be, determined enough to receive the ball in the penalty box. And time again, he's allowed Rashford to become another left back. He's become Greenwood to become another right back. So they say, oh, we're going deeper to get the ball. There's no space in there. Fernandes to go deeper. So it leaves the front player by himself. And I'm screaming at the telly, no, get those players higher up the field. You need to be more players in the box. And he does it time and time again. And then when they struggle, he wonders why. Well, that's the reason why, because the players are coming too deep to get the ball.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you both. I just think, Augie, we were together at Spurs last season, wasn't it, when United won 3-1. I thought physically they looked so fit. I thought they were very clever in the way they approached that second half. Pogba was great, and we're going to talk about Pogba in a minute. But I just, there's times where I see something really into that team, and there's other times where I'm thinking, like, they're not going to go anywhere.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? And I'd like to give Solskjaer the benefit of the doubt. I think he's a good guy, and I think he has made a difference. When he came in to replace Mourinho, there was obviously a job to do in terms of, you know, refocusing the squad, getting players out, changing the attitude. And I think he's done that, but I still think he lacks that hard edge, that mental. I never see him digging players out of the touchline. I'm not saying that you should do that all the time, but that I don't get the sense that when the players look at Solskjaer, they're worried or they've got a fear for the manager. Now, you look at the City players with Guardiola and the Liverpool players with Klopp. You know that they know he's the boss. When the United players look at Solskjaer, I'm not sure they do. I'm not sure they look at his coaching staff and think they're going to make me better. I think they're good coaches, but I don't think they're elite coaches that can make a difference. And that for me is where United are falling down. There's a lack of world-class expertise on the touchline, in the dugout. You know, they've got great players now. They have got top-class players, but I've often wondered, you know, if Pep Guardiola had had Marcus Rashford for the last 3 years, what sort of player he would be now compared to how he's, you know, I don't think he's kicked on at United for the last 3 years. I really don't. I think there's Anthony Martial is another one. There's too many players at United that I feel that have got fantastic talent, but drift along a little bit because they're allowed to drift along because they don't have the ultimate respect stroke fear for the manager, which they do at Liverpool and City and other
teams. Yeah, maybe you're right.
He makes a great point.
I don't think that'll ever change.
Hockey makes a great point. You know, you need coaches that are going to inspire the players and make them better. And I think what Solskjaer does, he makes them feel happy. He makes them feel confident, but he's not actually improving their tactical understanding. Pep Guardiola improves the tactical awareness of players. I'm not sure Solskjaer does that. And he has to do that when you're developing young players. You know, Sancho coming in, he still needs a lot of work done on him tactically. He's a great technician. He can go past people with the ball, but tactically, he needs to be better. That's where Solskjaer has got to do his job.
Right, let's talk about my boy Paul Pogba. And before we get your view, Augie, and what him staying or him leaving would mean to United, and I'll ask you, Stu, about how important it is for United to keep him, maybe. So this is what I have from Pogba. Pogba loves Manchester United. Mm-hmm. He's happy there. There's no problem. He's got 1 year left on his contract. He would also be very happy, I think, to go to PSG because PSG want him. They would have to sell first before putting any kind of offer on the table at United. But certainly, the discussion that Leonardo and Mino Raiola have had on Pogba were very positive in the past. But before United fans jump on us, Pogba would be very happy to stay at the club as well. There's no problem for him. But for United, is it important to keep him? Because if you do sell him, and they might do that towards the end of this transfer window, I mean, good luck to replacing him and finding someone, you know, as good as him or with that kind of potential coming in.
I'm a great fan of Paul Pogba. I have been since I watched him play for Juventus. I used to watch him every week. And I thought there's nothing he couldn't do as a midfield player at that particular time. He could hold off challenges. He could pick passes out. He could score goals. He could go and close down. He was a much better defender than he has been at Manchester United when he was playing for Juventus. Yeah. And that's, again, down to the coaching of Antonio Conte to start with. And then Max Allegri got the best out of him. I'm never sure that Manchester United have got the best out of Paul Pogba, or Paul Pogba hasn't got the best out of himself at Manchester United. I'm not quite sure. If I was the coach, Paul Pogba would be the first name on the team sheet, but I'm not sure that's the case.
Augie, what's one, how, like, do you think that they have to keep him to be, you know, to stay title contenders, as we mentioned, or because it would be too hard to replace? Do you think they should sell him? What do you think will happen?
Look, Paul Pogba is a great player at the wrong team. I just think he's been there for 5 years now and it's not really worked. And I don't think it will work because of all the reasons we've discussed before. You know, he was great at Juventus under Conte because Conte would really get into him and really had kind of, you know, force him and drive him, which, again, Solskjaer doesn't really do. And I think for United's best interest, it would be best to let him go. Let him go to PSG. I mean, I'd take Idrissa Gueye because that, for me, would be an upgrade on your central defensive midfielder straight away, or try and get somebody else out of it. Well, to get Baratti, but I don't think that'll happen. But I think Pogba is a great player, surrounded by great players. I just think for what United are right now and what they will be in the next year, I don't think Pogba is the guy that can take them to the next level. I think he needs players alongside him that will take him and elevate him to the next level too. And United haven't got that. you know, he's playing with Fred and Nemanja Matić. It's not the same caliber of players he plays with France. I mean, people say, oh, he's great for France and he's this. Of course he is. Because he's got Mbappe in front of him, he's got Kante behind him, he's got Griezmann in front of him. He hasn't got that sort of quality at United. So I think it's best for everybody that he goes this summer, because United get some money and they can replace him, or they can spend it to strengthen the squad. Pogba gets the move. I mean, you said, Jules, that he's happy at United. He shouldn't be happy at United. Why is he happy at United? He's been there for 5 years. He's won two trophies. Two minor trophies,
to be honest. He likes the club, and he likes the people at the club.
Yeah, fine, but as a professional with the drive and desire to win things, he should have wanted to be out of there 3 years ago, because as a calibre player that he is, he should be wanting to play for a team that can win the Champions League. All that United wants to be at the minute is in the Champions League, not to win it. So Pogba is the sort of player that needs to be at a club that can win things. He shouldn't be happy there. He should be kicking the doors out to get out, because they haven't.
But there's two ways you can look at it, Oggy. There's two ways you could look at it. You could look at it that he wants to go to a club that can win trophies, or you judge your own, or you back your own judgment as a player and say, I can make Manchester United title winners. I can win the cup with Manchester United. So he obviously doesn't back his judgment his quality quite as much.
There were times last season, I thought January, February time, I thought he had a really good period, and he looked like that player that could do it, and it fizzled out, and you know, he picked up an injury, but I don't think Pogba can do that, be the guy. Can he be Man United's Kevin De Bruyne? No, I don't think he can be that guy for a season.
It's not that profile anyway.
No, but in terms of being the guy in the... We all hear about Pogba, we see the videos with France of him as a leader and getting everyone around him, and that's great. But I don't see him as a leader with United often enough. I don't think he seems to sustain it. The leader at Man United is Bruno Fernandes. It's not Pogba. If I was Pogba, I'd be quite irritated by that because Pogba is, you know, the big star, the big profile, and he's got all the talent, but he's allowed Bruno Fernandes to come in and kind of eclipse him in the team. And you can argue that Pogba is a better player, but he doesn't have that on-field work rate tenacity that Fernandes shows. Fernandes maybe gets away with it a little bit because he works so hard and puts and looks so angry on the pitch. I think Pogba looks the opposite sometimes and doesn't put the effort in. So when people talk about what a great player Fernandes is, he does give himself that bonus by looking so animated on the pitch. Fans can kind of see that sometimes in the player, and it buys them a lot of currency, whereby a player that doesn't have that same sort of passion doesn't quite get the same reception, I guess. And I think Pogba should be frustrated at United, because the project that was sold to him 5 years when he arrived was that 2016, we want you to make us Premier League competitive, Champions League competitive. 5 years on, they never have been. So if I was him, I'd feel like I've been cheated by Man United, in the sense that they've never signed the players that would make them better until now. It's taken 5 years to sign the players that Paul Pogba would have expected 5 years ago. So United have let Pogba down as well. You know, people might say he's let them down by not performing. They've let him down by not signing the players, the calibre of players that would elevate that team to be the Champions League competitive team, the Premier League competitive team that he thought he was joining 5 years
ago. Yeah, no, you're right. Although this summer, if you're Paul Pogba and you see Raphael Varane arriving, who is one of your best friends, who you've been playing for France since you were like kids, Jadon Sancho, who Paul Pogba knows well enough and what the talent he is, if Kieran Trippier comes, do you see what I mean? Then if you're Paul Pogba, you're thinking, okay, so they're making the efforts, they're putting the investment and the money, and now we have a team that looks a hell of a team. And by the way, what a very important season this one coming for Bruno Fernandes, because I still maintain the point that I made last season, is that in the big games, he was anonymous too often. I know he scored a penalty at the Etihad when they beat City, but for me, he was not doing enough in those big games to take United to winning those big games. So big season for them. And for Pogba, I can understand everything you're saying, Oggy, but who do you replace him with? Goretzka is not going to come. So if you go and get Kamavinga, this is not the level right now of Paul Pogba. If you go and get Saul Niguez, this is not the level of Paul Pogba right now. There's not many players who you can bring to United this summer to replace Pogba that will bring you as much as him, though.
Well, maybe they need a different type of player. Maybe they don't need a Pogba. Maybe they need a player that isn't quite as talented as Pogba, but more of a team player, more of a 7 out of 10 every week than Pogba, who can be a 9 out of 10 or can be a 3 out of 10, as we've seen too often. So
Oggy, to a certain degree, you're almost saying, and I understand, Pogba or Fernandes, who can you play both of them in the same side if you're playing with three in midfield, with a holding midfield player on one either side? Is it...
They did play... Yeah, I mean...
But can you do it successfully with both of them in the team?
They did play at times successful last season, but not often enough and not consistently enough. But obviously, like you say, you need that kind of defensive quality behind them to allow them to play together, or that work rate in the team. I think with the options they've got at defensive midfield, I don't think any of those three options are long-term good enough to enable Fernandes and Pogba to be the players that they can be. Varane will make a difference. Varane will obviously make the defence better, but until United get a player that is comparable to N'Golo Kante or, you know, some of that ilk, they're going to struggle because, as it stands right now, that defensive midfield position is crucial and they haven't got the players good enough to do it. They just haven't.
No, it's a good point. I mean, it's an exciting time for United right now, to be fair, Ogie. I don't know when was the last summer when you could get so excited as a United fan with the signings that the club have made, right? So,
well, you can hear how excited he is about the season coming up, can't
true.
You?
True, that's a very good point. But certainly, if you're a United fan, you should be excited. Let's see what Solskjaer does with those teams, with the new players. There might be more coming. And we will check that in the next few episodes of the Gavin Jules Show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, enough Man United, Stu. Mm-hmm. Ogie is still with us as well to look at the other top clubs in the Premier League mm-hmm. and that sort of top six bracket and what they've been doing so far in this transfer window. I mean, we have to start by Manchester City mm-hmm. and Jack Grealish. Ogie, you will give us the latest of what we have on that, but is it a good idea for you? Is it a good thing to spend all that money on Jack Grealish if you're City?
I can see why they'd want a player like that, because they're a passing team, really, Manchester City. And we saw in the Champions League final that if the team is set up against them and defend really well, it's sometimes difficult to break teams down. Mm. Usually their passing and their movement is good enough. So you need somebody that can open up defences by taking somebody on. Manchester United had just bought Sancho. Grealish is probably even better at going past people in a different way. Yeah. He's a trickier rather than pacey. And I think he gives them another option. You know, if they need to break down defences, he can just wriggle away from a challenge and just change the setup of the defensive organisation of the opposition. And that's why I think he's going to be bought.
I agree with you.
Just to give them something different.
Yeah. Ogie, we're recording the show on Monday. Is this going to happen before some of our listeners and viewers see the show?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it'll be done in the next 24, 40 hours. I think it will take a few days. But I think it could it be done for the Community Shield, possibly. I mean, deals never seem to happen very quickly these days. But I think this deal is much more likely to happen quickly, if at all, than Harry Kane to Man City. I think obviously there's an appetite with City and with Grealish to be done. I think we've seen that Villa already signed Wendia from Norwich as a replacement. So, you know, Villa might play the game publicly to resist City's interest. But I do think that this deal will happen fairly quickly. It'd be good if it does happen before the Community Shield, so we can see him, you know, maybe play against Leicester at the weekend. But yeah, I do think Grealish comes in. I'm not sure he makes that much of a difference to Man City, because I think they've got so much attacking talent, so many attacking midfielders, you know, Raheem Sterling, Bernardo Silva, Riyad Mahrez, you know, Phil Foden. It's hard to see where they all fit in. So, yeah, Grealish makes them different, but I'm not sure. Is it £100 million with the difference? I'm not sure. I'm really not. It's a strange one for me.
And yeah, and you will have to let some go. I mean, Raheem Sterling, still no negotiation of a new contract. You're not going to sell Phil Foden. Riyad Mahrez, maybe, who's hit 30, who turned 30 a few months ago.
But I think Mahrez has been a key player for them.
Yeah, he's been very good, that ball they hit
out to the right-hand side completely. And he comes in on his left foot. I think he's caused a lot of problems over the last season. He was at his best last season, so it seems a strange time to actually get rid of him when he's playing at his best. But Guardiola seems to have little spells of liking players and not liking players. Bernardo Silva was their best player a couple of years ago, and then suddenly he couldn't get into the side. You know, Sterling was the key player. Then at the end of last season, he didn't play very often. So Pep Guardiola seems to have a little spells of liking players and disliking players. How Grealish fits in, we'll have to wait and see.
So no signing yet for City, but maybe as we said, Grealish coming in. For Liverpool, only one signing so far is Ibrahima Konate, the young French centre-back. I don't know if you saw his shirt number revealed the way he did it. He went back to his neighborhood in Paris and had all his mates, and he was in the pitch where he used to play as a kid, and they had like fireworks, and he showed the number, which I thought was super cool, but obviously I'm biased. Ogie, are you disappointed that it's only Konate so far? Is it because there's not enough money there to go and sign a midfield replacement for Wijnaldum, who left on a free to go to PSG, for example? Is it because they're waiting to get the right target, or what's going on?
Yeah, I think they did well to get Konate so early. I think, you know, that shows Liverpool's, you know, dealing in the transfer market. But you look at Liverpool at the end of last season, I didn't really see them doing much anyway, because, you know, the front three isn't going to change very often, plus the front three plus Diogo Jota, so they're not short there. In midfield, yeah, you could say that they need to replace Wijnaldum, but Henderson's fit again, although Henderson's kind of not happy that he's not been given a new contract. They probably do need a younger player in midfield, but I don't quite know where they go. I mean, people talked about Tielemans at Leicester. I'm not sure Liverpool have got the money to do that right now, but, you know, the squad itself, I think there's definitely another good season in that squad. I think beyond that, you look at the age of the team and the key players, they're all late 20s, early 30s. They need to start looking long-term. But I think right now, in the middle of a pandemic where they've had financial issues, I think this is probably the best it's going to be for Liverpool.
Chelsea also have been quite quiet, considering what we thought they could do the summer that they had last year, where they spent so much money. The money is clearly still available. Are you surprised that they've been talking to players like Jules Koundé, for example, the Sevilla centre-back, and I think they will bring him eventually. They've had a lot of talks with Holland and bring him a striker, Lukaku as well. Where do you think Chelsea should strengthen, and are you surprised they haven't strengthened yet?
I think the two players that you're talking about, the centre-forward, I still think they would need an out-and-out centre-forward. I don't think Timo Werner has been quite good enough. Yeah. And they often play him out on the left-hand side, coming in onto his right foot. The centre-halves, he looks like he's going to play with three at the back. Koundé would be the ideal centre-half on the right-hand side.
Yeah, definitely.
Azpilicueta has done it. Reece James has done it. Reece James did it very well, and Azpilicueta played at right wing-back. They've changed that around. But Koundé would come in and be absolutely ideal. He's quick, he can read danger, he's decent in the air, you know, for not a particularly big player. So I think it would be an ideal signing. So that would be the one that I would go with.
What about Arsenal? Ben White, £50 million. Are you...
It's a massive signing. We saw, and we're going to talk about it later, but we saw Arsenal play against Chelsea and still looked poor defensively, still made mistakes. Arsenal need Ben White to be the kingpin of that defence. If you're going to spend £50 million on a player who come in at centre-half, I know he's young, but he's almost got to be given... It's no good Arteta saying, well, we'll break him in gently and he's got to come in and be their leader. Yeah. He's got to be the one that reads the game. He's got to get others around him. He's got to go and be the one that comes out with the ball. He's got to be the Harry Maguire of Arsenal. He's got to go and lead from the front, right from the off.
Are you surprised that Chelsea haven't signed anyone yet? I mean, we saw, again, as we said earlier on the show, how active they were last summer. This summer has been far more quiet. They certainly don't have as much money as they had last summer, but I think Koundé will happen. I think they will get Koundé, whether Zuma leaves or not, or where he goes. But are you surprised that they've been so quiet?
A little bit, but I do get the impression with Chelsea that they are waiting and waiting just to see if Dortmund crack with Haaland. It's a big summer for Dortmund because, as we know, that I think is it £66 million Haaland's release clause next year?
Yeah.
And, you know, Haaland has made it clear he's not in a rush to leave this summer. Dortmund aren't in a rush to sell him. But if Dortmund suddenly get an offer, £120 million, £130 million for a player that can go for £66 million next summer, then Dortmund might say, look, now's the time to do it. They've already cashed in on Sancho this summer. And again, a bit like Bayern Munich, how sensible they are in terms of dealing the market. If Dortmund might say, financially, from a business perspective, it's time to sell Haaland. And if that's the case, if Chelsea are keeping their powder dry until late in the window for that to happen, then it makes sense because that would solve the centre-forward problem at a stroke for the next 10 years.
Can you imagine Haaland at Chelsea?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know that Raiola that Chelsea have been in touch with Raiola and Alfie Haaland, but I mean, I think Tuchel would make wonders with Haaland.
Oh, he'd be an outstanding player for them. You know, he's an outstanding player now. He's got everything you want from a centre forward. He can run in behind. He can hold up the play. He's good in the air. He's a great finisher. He's got excellent pace. He's everything you want from a centre forward. And that would fit Chelsea perfectly because that's what they're missing. You know, whether they've tried to play Havertz at centre forward, they've tried to play Timo Werner at centre forward. Neither have really worked out. I think both are better coming from slightly wider positions. Timo Werner just had a poor season all round. So Haaland would be an absolutely brilliant signing for Chelsea.
It would be fantastic. It would be for the Premier League
for
as well.
For the Premier League, yeah.
To have Haaland. We talked about Liverpool earlier, Ogi, as well, and Konate coming in and the fact that they were also quite quiet. And you mentioned Jordan Henderson and the new deal that he's a bit frustrated that there's no deal yet on the table for him to sign. They've extended Trent Alexander-Arnold until 2025, which is great. There's also talks about maybe other senior players to get an extension. And you said, which I thought was interesting, there's at least one more good season within this squad. Do they maybe think there's more than one and that's why they want to also extend maybe the likes of, I don't know, Van Dijk, who extended not long ago, same with Mane and Salah, but is that what they're thinking?
You know, they've got 13 first-team players with 2 years left in the contract, including Salah, Firmino, Mane, Van Dijk, Fabinho. They're in a situation now where, and Henderson's another one, where they've got to make big decisions on players. And you know, you give Fabinho a contract first because of his age. Henderson, I know Henderson's not particularly happy that he's not been given a new contract, but why would he give Jordan Henderson, I think he's 31 now, an extension on a deal that's got 2 years left? He's had injuries. So, but this is the problem you've got. You've got players that have made big contributions to Liverpool the last few years. Salah, you know, Salah's got 2 years left in his contract. That's a big problem for Liverpool because is he 29, 30 now?
Yeah, 29, I think he did.
What do you do with Mo Salah? Because if you give him a new contract that may be extension another 2 years on top of that, you've got a guy in his early 30s that has always kind of flirted with the move to Spain. So Liverpool, for me, their priority this year is to resolve a lot of these issues because you've got a lot of players who will want to know whether the club is committed to them beyond the next 2 years. And so Liverpool can't give them all contracts. I mean, let's just boil it down to the front three. Roberto Firmino, Sadio Mane, Mo Salah, all out of contract in 2023. Do you give them all new contracts? Maybe not. So the one that you don't give a new contract to, what do you do with him? You know, so that's why I think Liverpool have spent more time focusing internally than looking to bring players in because they've got so many big issues to resolve. And all these players that are on, they've got 2 years left on the contract, they'll be on big money as well. So that for me is a difficult one because I don't see where you go with those. There's some players you have to let go. You can't keep them all. You just can't extend them all at that age.
If Gab was here, he would be shouting, you can't give long contracts to over 30s and you can't do this and this is not a position to be in if you're Liverpool. Do you... This is a trick, like Ogi explained, it's a tricky situation.
He should
situation.
Be a chief executive, shouldn't he?
Ogi? I know.
He should be a chief executive in one of these big clubs. But the problem I see with Liverpool to a certain degree is Jurgen Klopp plays a high-intensity game of football. That's Liverpool at their best, whether it's counter-attacking, whether it's winning the ball back, pressing high up the field. How long can players do that for? You know, and I've seen it over the years that with managers, and he had it at Borussia Dortmund where it worked for several years, and then it suddenly came crumbling down. And players can't play at that tempo year after year after year and play with the same enthusiasm. And that's the problem he had last year. Not just the injuries, their intensity to close the ball down and work hard went. He's got to get that back. That's going to be key for Liverpool this season.
Or change a bit.
Or change. I'm not sure he can change because he's always played the same way.
Yeah, true.
You know, that he says the pressing game, the high intensity game, that's, I mean, they counter attacked in a game last year and he turned to the camera and he kept on saying, that's how you play football. That's how you play football. That's the way he wants football played.
Yeah.
And I think it's a hard thing to do year in, year out for aging players as well.
Yeah. No, that's true. We talked about Arsenal as well and Ben White and it was, you made a really good point. Mikel Arteta also said yesterday that Granit Xhaka was staying at the club. I think there might be a new deal coming up. We've talked a lot about new deals too for players. Is this the right thing to do? There were talks with Roma that he could go to Roma. Clearly, the offer from Roma was not big enough for Arsenal's liking for Granit Xhaka. Where do you stand?
I've never been a fan of Granit Xhaka as a footballer. I think he's a decent passer of the ball, not a great passer of the ball, but he's always going to have problems because he's not particularly quick. And if you're playing as a holding midfield player and you keep committing fouls because you don't want to run, so you dive into challenges, it's been a problem with his discipline. Has he played better for Arsenal in recent times? Yes, he has. So you might as well keep him while he's at somewhere near his best.
Yeah.
You know, because when he first came, I thought he was ill-disciplined and didn't play particularly well. Arteta seems to be getting the best out of him at the moment. So, yeah, he might as well keep him.
Do you think they still need a creator, like a number 10 somewhere? We saw Smith Rowe playing against Chelsea. Mm. He's not a kind of a dictating number 10, you know, that can put the foot on the ball and create and organise the play. He's more about movement.
Would you say that Odegaard did it particularly well? He did it okay.
Yeah, but this is the kind of profile they're looking for.
That's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they do need one of those players. When you've got Saka to come back in the team, he didn't play against Chelsea, you know, and you've got Smith Rowe, who I think is an outstanding player.
Definitely.
I think he can play in the number. You don't always have to play a passing player in the number 10 position. You can play somebody who can run, pick the ball up and run with it, which Smith Rowe can do. So I wouldn't say that's a priority for Arsenal at the moment. It's what they do in the centre forward position. You know, what happens to Lacazette? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go?
Yeah.
Does Aubameyang play on the left-hand side? Does he play through the middle?
Ketia has been looking good.
Yeah. And they're the questions you have to ask.
Well. Yeah. Okay, is there any other clubs that have impressed you? We saw Leicester, who signed Boubacar Soumaré from Lille, and Dakar from RB Salzburg as well. They've had Ryan Bertrand on a free, I think, from Southampton. We saw Leeds doing quite a lot of business. Aston Villa, you mentioned. Buendia, yeah. Ashley Young coming back. Now Leon Bailey too, from Bayer Leverkusen.
I think they've all done well. I think Leicester always do well. I think Leicester always, you know, they have a very good strategic plan that they know who they're going to sign 6-12 months in advance because they've got a good system there. I think the one club that they're interesting for me in terms of what they've done is Everton. You know, they brought Benitez in and they've made a few signings on the wing at the minute. But it'll be interesting to see what Everton do this year with Benitez, whether he can organise them better, get them winning the home games. I mean, there's so many issues for Benitez to address himself, for a start, you know, how he gets received by the Everton fans. But I think, you know, Everton's got money. They made a couple of signings early on. I don't think he'll keep James Rodriguez. I'm not quite sure James and Benitez are a marriage made in heaven.
Definitely.
So I think Everton will be worth watching. They've got a good manager, and they've got a good manager with ambition and money. So let's see how they progress in the next 2-3 weeks of the window.
I'm not sure.
What would Gab say? You know, he's just had to go Ancelotti there, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. He's now got a good manager, someone who's going to organise the team. Gab would go mad at that.
And also, I'm not sure Andros Townsend can fit in the category of very exciting new signing if you're an Everton fan. But I might be wrong. He might score 20 goals and 10 assists in the season. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, talk about Ancelotti's deal. I mean, Ancelotti's a great coach, but Everton's home record was terrible last season.
It was, to be fair.
I think Ancelotti got away with it quite a bit because the fans loved him, but when you look at the stats and how they tailed off, if that was Marco Silva's team or David Moyes' team, they'd have been sacked.
I wasn't criticising you. I was just saying that Gab would have criticised you heavily.
Yeah, I know.
It's probably better than
that. Ancelotti, as great as he is, he does get away with a little bit because he's...
Too much.
Crystal Palace as well. I mean, we mentioned Patrick Vieira because Oge and I are both hoping to get an interview with him. But so some of the business, I mean, and we said for Palace, it was a big summer because they had so many players out of contract. And obviously, Roy Hodgson is gone. Patrick Vieira has come in, and I think there will be a lot of pressure on him, but let's see what he can bring. But if you think about Conor Gallagher from Chelsea, Mark Gay from Chelsea as well, I mean, Gallagher is on loan, but to sign Gay, to sign Olise from Reading, who had a really good season in the Championship, who is a bit like, you know what... It was with QPR the season before that in the Championship. Joachim Andersen, who did quite well at Fulham, who arrived from Lyon. It's pretty good from Palace, Ogie, no?
Yeah, I think Conor Gallagher is a good player. I think he had a great season at West Brom last year, so I think it'll be interesting to see how he does. It's a good signing, that. It's a difficult one for Vieira at Palace, because they're a club that... What is success at Crystal Palace? Is it just getting them 11th or 12th and keeping them away from the drop zone, or is it pushing on? Because they never quite seem to have that within them. So I don't quite know what his parameters are, Vieira, what his success idea is. But for him as well as a coach, this is make or break for Patrick Vieira, because he had a great time in France with Nice. New York City FC was kind of, you know... No, who knows? It's the MLS, isn't it? He's got to prove that he's up to the hype. At some point in Man City, they were looking at him as a potential successor, a long-term successor to Guardiola. It never quite happened, and he's gone off and done his own thing. But yeah, it's a big jump this for Patrick Vieira. So I hope it succeeds. But again, at Crystal Palace, I'm not quite sure how they measure success or what success is.
Well, he's absolutely right. the big question would be not about the players, it'd be about Patrick Vieira. We saw De Boer come in and do a horrendous job at Crystal Palace. The players didn't take to him. Obviously, the coaching wasn't quite right. Patrick Vieira, when I've watched his teams play, I saw him coach the Manchester City youth team. And I was always a little bit wary that there wasn't a lot of coaching going on. You know, he had the presence on the side of the field. I saw the same at New York City FC and saw the same at Nice. I'm not sure he's a top quality coach, and that's going to be the big question mark.
Right. I have to defend him because, well, I don't know why you're ganging up on him, but he's one of mine. So I agree in a lot of things that you said. I just think he's still learning. Yeah. He's still a young coach, even in terms of experience.
But how much time would he be given to learn?
Yeah,
that's the problem.
I know. But I think if you're Palace and you're in a transition year and you appoint someone like him, is to give him a bit of time to put his ideas together. He's got a lot of young players, plus some from the academy. Yeah. That he will play and try to incorporate in his idea and methodology. So,
let's hope he's successful.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, but it'll be an exciting season for Palace and many other teams that we mentioned.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Right, enough transfers, City, United, all the clubs. It's time for quick hits, Stu.
Let's go, Jules.
We usually see a lot of unforgettable friendlies, in pre-season and everything. But I thought the Chelsea-Arsenal game on Sunday at the Emirates was quite interesting. Did you learn anything?
I learned a little bit, hopefully learned a bit, that if Chelsea play against weaker sides, the formation they play with the back three, but the wing-backs were two out-and-out wingers.
Yeah.
So they played with two holding midfield players, a back three, and the rest of the players were forward-thinking players. And I think Tuchel may use that at home against some of the weaker sides when they need to break teams down. That might be the formation, the sort of personnel he will use.
So Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi
were the wing-backs, And then you've got Havertz and Ziyech and Timo Werner. Well, that's a very attacking side.
It is.
As for Arsenal, I think they play some very good football. Smith Rowe looked another good player playing in the number 10 role. But you can see they need Ben White back in that, or to come into the side and really be a leader, because they were poor defensively at times. They allowed too much space.
I agree with you.
Staying with Chelsea, Jules, we know more about the fans' situation for their Super Cup against Villarreal.
Yeah, that's coming up on August the 11th.
Yeah.
Super European Cup, obviously, Champions League winner against Europa League winner. It will be in Belfast and there will be 13,000 fans now. UEFA have decided you will have to show a negative test before coming into the stadium, but at least it's good to have, and we've seen fans being back in some friendlies and some games, and to have 13,000 fans for a European Super Cup is pretty good. Let's hope that they can maintain fans like this and having more and more fans. Sad news, however, Stu, last weekend, with the passing of Leeds and England legend Terry Cooper.
Yeah, he was an excellent left back. I think he played something like 20 odd times for England. He was part of the Leeds side that was so dominant and the best team in England at that particular time in the 70s under Don Revie. He then had a good spell at Bristol City as a player and manager and coach. But unfortunately, he'd be known quite a bit for his second half performance against West Germany in 1970. He was part of the World Cup team in 1970. And Grabowski went past him on two or three occasions when West Germany got back into the game. But he was an outstanding left back, particularly going forward. And he was the start of fullbacks that did like to get forward and get crosses into the box.
That's almost a new genre.
He was, yes. So very sad news. Now, PSG started their season with a defeat in the French Community Shield. What's going on, Jules?
Oh, man. I was hoping that we could try to avoid talking about PSG.
No, we weren't going to avoid that.
You had forgotten or not watched it. I mean, where do I start? Okay, most of the top players. This was a reserve team.
So excuses already.
No. Oh my God. I can't believe you're saying that. No, I'm just saying, if you were wondering if Neymar played, no. Mbappe, no. Verratti, no. Marquinhos, no. Di Maria, no.
Yeah.
Wijnaldum came on late in the game. There was no Donnarumma. Hakimi played at right back and was really good. Maybe the best PSG player. But again, collectively, there was no strength. I mean, Lille are very good at that, being strong collectively, disciplined. They worked hard through the whole game.
Difficult times for Pochettino this season?
Well, I'm just a bit disappointed by the content. Mm. And okay, maybe because there's no top players in that team, it will come later.
But you still want to see patterns of play. You still want to
see what's, but there was none of that in that game. So it's not the best of start, but I can say when PSG win, I say, yeah, it's a very important trophy. When PSG lose, I say, like, this is not important. It's only the community shield. Mm. You see what I mean? It's just Manchester City confirmed, we talked about them earlier, that Marcus Rashford will go through surgery for his shoulder. He'll be out 12 weeks. This is something that he kept delaying. So it's right that he does it, although it's a big miss and it's a long time.
It depends what the injury is. If it keeps being dislocated, which then you have to have the operation. But that's more than 12 weeks. I know my own son had his dislocated his shoulder and had an operation. He was out for 6 months as a young player. So depending what sort of operation he's having done, it could be anything from 12 to 6 months, I would say. 12 weeks to six months. So it's a big decision. It's and big. I think he has to make it because you can't keep having your shoulder go out all the time. Now, another favourite of yours, Olivier Giroud. Scored on his debut for AC Milan against Nice. Do you think he can keep this up? A goal a game?
I'm not sure. As much as I love him, and I hope he won't, you know, he won't be crazy at me if I say that. I don't think he will keep the ratio of one in one. But his dream debut, even if it's in a friendly, you come on, you're 1-0 down, you score, you level the score, 1-1. I think there's this curse on number nine since people in Zaghi retired in 2012. The number nines, the lack of Torres and Matri, Piontek, all failed. No one was scoring. So he's wearing the number nine. I hope he does well. He deserves a good season with Milan. I think he still has a lot to offer, different to what Ibra would do or the players that they have there. So I'm optimistic.
Will he start games, you think?
No, I think Ibra would start, but I think he would play enough because of Ibra's age, rotation.
And getting himself sent off every so often.
Exactly. And Giroud can't start every game either. So I think they would have a good balance there. Yeah. Really, definitely. Scotland are up and running already in the league, Stu, and we saw Celtic losing for Ange Postecoglou's first game. Rangers, on the other hand, won with Stevie G.
You don't even need to ask the question. Really? Rangers are going to win the title. They're on
already, he's done.
Things are going horribly wrong at Celtic at the moment. They're already out of the Champions League.
Postecoglou is a good coach, though.
He's a good coach. But I think something's wrong at Celtic at the moment. You know, and if you look at the history of the title, it's either Rangers or Celtic. And at the moment, Rangers are a team that are playing with confidence. They've got a young manager that seems to be getting the best out of the players. The crowd are right behind the team. And you've got another club that are going through turmoil. So I can only see one result, and that's Rangers winning the title again.
But is it because when you win so much, like Celtic did, so it was in 9 in a row and 10 has only been done once before or something. It's just that you take your eye off the ball as a club.
You know, they sort of think it's becoming too easy. They don't get their recruitment quite right. They don't get the management quite right. The players think that it's too easy. And there's all sorts of things that can go wrong. But it only needs to go wrong for a couple of weeks. When you're successful with someone like Celtic, if you have two or three bad results, suddenly it's a crisis.
The fans turn.
The players sort of lose confidence. The manager might get the sack. The ball sort of make rash decisions. So, I can only see Rangers winning this year. Now, Andrei Shevchenko was the Ukrainian manager for the European Championships. He's now gone.
He's now gone, Stu, after 5 years. Yeah. And I think we can say, not just because they qualified for the quarterfinals in the Euro this year and did really well.
They only won one game, didn't they?
I know. But still, I think psychologically, to go past, you know, they've always failed before. There was progress. I saw him being very astute tactically against France, for example, in the qualifier before. On defending against Kylian Mbappe. So I think that there's been a lot of good things from Shevchenko in those 5 years where he learned a lot. And now I think he will be ready if he wants to go.
Is it his choice to go?
I think it was a mutual consent. Yeah. And I think there will be a few clubs in Italy, especially where I think his name is still high and, you know, the stakes
it's higher than it is at Chelsea, let's say.
Yeah, I think you could put that way. But you know, if you're looking for a young coach like him, who, like we said, has learned a lot, has got that kind of charisma.
And you're absolutely right. All his backroom staff for the Ukrainian team were Italian.
Yeah, they were, exactly. Yeah. So I think he's made to go back there and coach at some point. Don't give him a huge job straight away because I still think he's learning. As we've been saying, as you said, in the European Championship, there was a lot of good things. You know, that front three worked well at times. Yeah. He moved from a back four to a back five. Yeah. We saw with Zinchenko sometimes playing wide, sometimes more centrally. I think there's good things there for him to kick on and go to have a really good career. And if you're a club in Italy that can give him a chance, I think you should.
Well, let's hope he is successful because he was a great player.
He was, wasn't he?
And you'd like to see great players become great managers, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and also he's had amazing managers, you know, that coached him. So if he just learned a little bit from all of them, then you would think that he could become a really good coach. But I thought, without being impressive too much at the Euros, I thought there was enough there for Klopp to go, you know what, it's worth looking at
him. And they've changed their style of football, Ukraine.
Yes,
and he's changed their style of football. They were quite dour in their style, quite defensive. He's opened them up a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that comes from the experience he had with some managers, that he could do that. Robert, we had more details this week on David Alaba's contract at Real Madrid, 5-year deal that will see him earn 115 million euros. He's got a 20 million euro year deal, plus the commission. I think it's 5 million for his dad, 6 million for his agent, Penny Zahavi. Does it make you regret sometimes that you were born at the wrong time and played football at the wrong time?
Probably my dad regrets it more that I was playing at the wrong time. Yeah, £5 million for your dad. That's some sort of contract,
pretty
isn't
cool.
it? And you can see why he let his contract run down at Bayern Munich when he knew he was going to get this sort of contract at Real Madrid. He's a top-class player, we know that. I don't think he had the best of European championships, whether he played at centre-half, whether he played in midfield, or whether he played at left-back. He's going to have to play well for that sort of money, isn't he?
Definitely. Yeah, bit of pressure.
Yeah. Gold Cup final.
Yeah.
Mexico versus USA, the dream final. What actually happened?
Well, the US won. And I think they were the underdogs before the final because all their top players are in Europe with their club. Yeah. This is a kind of a reserve squad for Greg Berhalter and the US. And yet Mexico, on the other hand, looked much stronger. Mm. And yet the US in extra time managed to win. I thought it was a very intense final with quite a lot of rhythm to it, chances for both sides. And I think, only the Gold Cup. It's the Gold Cup. But I think psychologically, this win, even without the big names for the US, could be something.
They're going to win the World Cup, according to everybody in America now. Is that right?
Well, I don't know if they will, but certainly I think there's clearly something growing there, which is good for them. Right, that's all we have time for today. Stu, thank you so much
for being my guest
for the first Gab and Jude show of the season. There'll be many, many more to come. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be back on Thursday with Mark Ogden, this time as Gab is still on holidays, for more Gab and Jude content.